The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're coming to you, well, I was going to say live, but actually we're recording this a couple of hours before our usual scheduled time, just because we've got a departure to Jerusalem coming up after lunch today, so that's very exciting. Speaking of Jerusalem, we'll be talking some about the Middle East on today's program. This is the day that President Trump unveils his deal of the century. You would expect it to be called that if it's coming from the Trump White House. This is his plan for the Middle East, or I guess Israel, and the Palestinians, to be precise. And again, speaking of the Middle East, we had a program over the weekend that played here in the UK, The Middle East in Prophecy. We haven't advertised the King of the South as much as we would have liked over these past few years, but finally we had the right program, the right content, and we were able to put that booklet on display. 164 requests just from the phone calls. We'll have, I'm sure, a couple dozen more requests come in as this week unfolds. So a really strong showing with the program here in the UK over the weekend on some of the events of the Middle East, which for the month of January, particularly at the start of January, were just crazy, as we covered on this program. So that is a really good sign that some of the listeners or viewers of the program here in the UK are interested in and requesting our literature. And I guess to stay with this theme, for the Bible study time later on today, we'll be focusing in on Jerusalem, which will certainly be good for me as I get ready for the trip to Jerusalem here in these next couple of days. Well, as I say, I was carrying on through the weekend, trying to keep things simple for today's broadcast, knowing that I needed to record it a couple of hours in advance. And I thought, well, I'll keep it simple. The impeachment, I guess the White House counsel finally had an opportunity to speak on Saturday, so I thought I'd read a little bit about that after the fact and focus some, I suppose, on that, and then transition into a Bible study, and then that would be that. But you look at this world any weekend, like I said with January, this world is on edge. It's on edge. The polarization, the strife, the hateful speech on social media and other platforms, and then just the ignorance, the fake news, the false narratives, the hoaxes, the lies. What a time we're living in. Paul said, evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. And we're seeing that. We certainly are. A lot of deception. A lot of people that just swallow these preposterous lies. There's some very scary and toxic ingredients brewing in our nations right now. And if your eyes are open to what's actually happening, you know that an explosion is coming. Ephesians 2:2, to get to root causes here, Ephesians 2:2 says that Satan is the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. So it is the devil and his demon army. They are stirring up people's emotions like never before, their moods, their attitudes. He's the one behind all of this negativity, this hate, these foul attitudes, these wrong moods. He's working on our people. He's working on our minds. He's working his powers of deception. And Revelation 12 says he's deceived the whole world. The whole world is deceived. Every bit of it. And there is observable and substantial evidence daily of Satan's influence. There is substantial evidence daily of spiritual warfare. It's going on this earth every day. Every day you wake up to it. From one story to the next. And we've got to step back and see the bigger picture in all of these frightening events. In America Under Attack, my father says, the devil and millions of demons are now confined to this earth. They can no longer go out into the universe. That's the first time that has ever happened. That's the first time that's ever happened. What are these evil spirits doing? These are beings with awesome power. Surely they're being cast down to this earth would have enormous impact on world affairs. Surely you can see the enormous impact these demons are having on world affairs. I gave a lecture earlier this morning for the Churchill class on Churchill's battle with fake news back in the 1930s and what he was going up against. He was not just a political outcast. There were members of the media who openly mocked him and rebuked him, who shunned him, who fired him, who laughed when he wasn't appointed as part of Stanley Baldwin's government in 1935, or who fired Churchill because, well, they didn't agree with his views. He was a warmonger, even as they were cozying up to Adolf Hitler. Jeffrey Dawson, the editor of the London Times, reaching out to Hitler. I read the quote, I can't remember if it's in Martin Gilbert's book or Manchester's, where he was writing to a friend. This editor of the Times saying, I don't know why Hitler and Germany could be mad at us. We're doing everything we can to soften the language and to even put in compliments. We just want Adolf Hitler to like us. Well, what about Churchill's warrant? Churchill, he needs to be banned. He needs to be blacklisted. He needs to be removed. He needs to be fired. That's what Churchill was going up against. And you know, the point my father makes, I plugged this book, the Winston S. Churchill booklet that we have, The Watchman. The point he makes in the fourth chapter there, the illusion of security. That's what the politicians and the media people were out there. They're creating a false narrative that, look, Britain, everything's going to be fine. We're never going to have another world war. Don't worry, nothing to worry about here. I mean, Hitler has some angry rhetoric here and there, but we're going to make peace with him. He's a reasonable man. He wants to sit down and talk to us. He just gave a peace speech. He just told us that all he really wants to do is to make peace. Okay, so he got the Rhineland. Okay, so he went into Austria. Okay, so he took over Czechoslovakia. But look, he wants peace. That was the illusion. That was the fake news of the 1930s. And my father says, today it's worse. It's worse. Look at the news media. Look at their behavior. Look at the lies that they've promoted. I played that montage for you last week. How they were just raving over Adam Schiff's opening statement at the impeachment trial. Raving. This is the same Adam Schiff who lied about Russian collusion for 2.5 years. He told us, look, there's more than circumstantial evidence. I've seen it. And then when the Nunes memo came out and said, there's no evidence, there are no facts to support this, Mr. Schiff lied. He said Nunes wasn't telling the truth when it came to FISA abuse. Schiff said, look, there's no abuse. There was no abuse here. And then more recently, he totally fabricated President Trump's phone call with the Ukrainian President Zelensky, He did it on live TV. He did it during an impeachment hearing. He made the president look like a mob boss. He made that phone call look like it was a shakedown. And the transcript is available for everyone to see. But he gave his version of the conversation. He gave his truth. And it was a bald-faced lie, is what it was. During that same time period, he lied about his relationship with the whistleblower. Lie after lie after lie. And yet, well, I mentioned last week too, the lie about the text messaging. Making it seem like it was Zelensky, when in fact it was Zlochevsky. It was a different guy. But he redacted that out so that you, Joe Q Public, so that you senators, so that you in the media would just take his message and run with it, and many did. There was one Republican senator over the weekend who said about Adam Schiff that he had never seen someone tell a lie with such conviction. That, if you don't understand what's happening in the world today, it doesn't make sense. How could someone who knows it's a lie stand up and say it with such conviction? Well, there's a real spirit world. That's right. That's why. There's millions of demons confined to this earth. John 8:44 says that Satan's the father of lies. He's the one generating them. And yet the media reaction, I played that montage last week. What did they say about his opening remarks? Well, that was dazzling. It was a compelling virtuoso. It was incredible. It was masterful. It's a speech that connected with our intimate and better angels. It's the kind of speech that school children, they're going to be repeating this 40, 50, 60 years from now. That's what our media, that's what they were telling us last week. Well, the case, factually, just looking at the facts, it's been a complete dud for the Democrats. And then now the Republicans finally get to speak. They did for a couple of hours on Saturday. They continue today. And it's looking more and more like they're not even going to have a vote for witnesses, or that if they vote for it, that there won't be any additional witnesses, which would mean the trial is effectively over, probably by the end of this week. But then last night, here comes another leak, another red-hot leak. Just before this trial is about to finish, this comes through a familiar source, the New York Times, the paper of record. John Bolton, he's writing a book. Some people somewhere have seen transcripts and have talked to other people somewhere who have somehow talked to the people at the New York Times. And what we now know, based on this leak, is that there was a quid pro quo. Here it is again. So predictable. And yet, there's plenty of people in the media and elsewhere who are quite happy to take this and run with it. The Times didn't even say it had access to the manuscript. It's just more anonymous sources. And it comes right at this time, just like the GAO report last week, right before the trial started. Yes, President Trump broke the law. That's what we believe. The attacks continue nonstop. The Times says multiple people describe Mr. Bolton's account of the Ukraine affair. The book presents an outline of what Mr. Bolton might testify to if he is called as a witness in the Senate impeachment trial, the people said, these anonymous people. The Times is there saying, look, he might testify if we could just get things to work out. If we could just get Mitt Romney and a couple of other senators. I think we need four. We've got to peel away four, and then we can extend this on out and continue the attacks and continue with the narrative that President Trump's the evil man. He's the one that are, he's the one telling the lies. He's the one that's attacking others, the bureau. He's attacking bureaucrats. He's attacking Ukrainians. He's attacking the Constitution. And they have it exactly backwards. He's the victim. He's the victim. He said earlier today, I never told John Bolton that the aid to Ukraine was tied to investigations into Democrats, including the Bidens. In fact, he never complained about this at the time of his very public termination. If John Bolton said this, it was only to sell a book. And so now it's he said, he said. And then you're going to have some weak Republicans, no doubt, that say, well, boy, I don't know. We need to, I guess we need to get some more witnesses. We need to give equal voice. We've got to give equal voice. Okay, we'll listen to the Republicans, but look, Adam Schiff, he needs to have his say. Nancy Pelosi, they need to have their say. This is exactly the way the devil wants it. He just wants to get in on the conversation. He just wants equal time. Back in the 30s, the Times of London, they were giving equal time to Hitler. Okay, you've got Hitler, you've got Chamberlain, Baldwin, Churchill. No, not Churchill. He's the problem. He's the warmonger. So we're going to blot him out. He's not even in the debate. Now, Hitler and Mussolini, sure, we want to talk to them. That's the 1930s. And the spirit of lies, deceit, it's even stronger today. Did you know that? Ephesians 2:2, Revelation 12:9, 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. Isaiah 59 says, truth fails. Truth fails. Well, we'll see how much traction this latest leak in a long line of leaks. We'll see how much traction it gets. Kobe Bryant, the basketball player, he died yesterday in a helicopter crash. And it's overshadowing some of this impeachment nonsense. So who knows how the next few days will unfold. But what a crazy world this is. And then the Twitter mob that gets off and running about a reporter reporting on Kobe Bryant's death, accidentally saying something that sounded like a racial slur. 7,000 people on Twitter say she should be fired. Never mind the leakers and the liars who get away with it routinely, repeatedly. They're still in Congress. They're still at the New York Times. They're still in good standing. But someone makes a mistake. And if the Twitter mob doesn't like it, well, then they've got to be fired for it. And how about the hate Trump crowd out there saying, well, I just wish it was Donald Trump on that helicopter instead of the basketball star we know and love. What a world. The prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. It does overshadow some of what's happened. The farce in the Senate. The president's lawyers spoke on Saturday just for 2 hours and actually started putting facts out there. This is the evidence. This is the evidence. Do you think the media, do you think they're interested in that? Here's White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, I guess is how you say his name. He's laying out their case or their strategy in these 3 days that they'll have the floor. Clip one.
But today, we are going to confront them on the merits of their argument. Now, they have the burden of proof. and they have not come close to meeting it.
They have the burden of proof. They've got to show that he's guilty. He's innocent until proven guilty. But you can expect the media today to focus in on what John Bolton might have said to people, people who talked to the New York Times. Anything to keep it going. The New York Post, it emphasized the White House counsel's admonition to read the transcript. You have the phone call right in front of you. If that's the controversy, read it. See what it says. See what went back and forth between these two world leaders. It says the White House counsel echoed that view when he told senators the transcript of the president's call with the president of Ukraine on July 25th is the best evidence that President Trump did absolutely nothing wrong. It says he cited passage after passage in the transcript that undercut the Dems' charge of a quid pro quo involving American military aid in exchange for investigation into Ukraine's role in the 2016 presidential election and Hunter Biden's lucrative gig with a corrupt energy company. His lucrative gig with a corrupt energy company. No need to investigate that. Nothing to see here or there. It says here the aim wasn't just to create reasonable doubt. The goal was to demolish the entire case against the president and expose lead prosecutor Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi as pure partisans trying to overturn the 2016 election and to steal the next one. Listen to another one of the White House attorneys as he pretty much dismantles the case. Here again, this is just in a couple of hours, Saturday morning, clip two.
Once you sweep away all of the bluster and innuendo, the selective leaks, the closed-door examinations of the Democrats' hand-picked witnesses, the staged public hearings, what we're left with are six key facts that have not and will not change. First, the transcript shows that the president did not condition either security assistance or a meeting on anything. The paused security assistance funds aren't even mentioned on the call. Second, President Zelensky and other Ukrainian officials have repeatedly said that there was no quid pro quo and no pressure on them to review anything. Third, President Zelensky and high-ranking Ukrainian officials did not even know the security assistance was paused until the end of August, over a month after the July 25 call. Fourth, not a single witness testified that the president himself said that there was any connection between any investigations and security assistance, a presidential meeting, or anything else. Fifth, the security assistance flowed on September 11, and a presidential meeting took place on September 25, without the Ukrainian government announcing any investigations. Finally, the Democrats' blind drive to impeach the president does not and cannot change the fact, as attested to by the Democrats' own witnesses, that President Trump has been a better friend and stronger supporter of Ukraine than his predecessor.
Those are the president's attorneys laying out the facts. Look at the support that he's given to Ukraine, the military support. Did you know there are three House managers on the Democrat side who voted against military aid to Ukraine during the Obama years? They're part of the House managers now presenting this case saying, how dare Donald Trump withhold military aid for 55 days? They voted against it during the Obama years, and Obama didn't give them any military aid. Obama gave them blankets. This is what, and we're supposed to just play along. We want to give both sides equal say. You've got, you've got a judge in the Supreme Court. He's presiding over this. And if he needs to correct them on their behavior, he's got to make sure it's doled out equally. Look, both of you, let's straighten up now. This is the Senate. These are our sacred institutions. Equal voice. Both sides get to be heard. Nobody has the courage, either in government or the media, to shut this down, to stop the lies and the deception. And so it worsens. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 13. It waxes worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. Listen to one more audio clip here from White House counsel Jay Sekulow, clip 3.
This entire impeachment process is about the House manager's insistence that they are able to read everybody's thoughts, they can read everybody's intention, even when the principal speakers, the witnesses themselves, insist that those interpretations are wrong.
That's Jay Sekulow talking about how that they're reading into the minds of Zelensky, President Trump, and even when all the witnesses, all the facts come forward saying, no, that's not what we were thinking. They insist. Oh, yes, it is. It absolutely is. Well, but you don't have any statements. But John Bolton might think that way. And so we need to put the brakes on all of this, slow it way down, and continue on with the farce. Jeremiah 5, I read this in the Churchill class today, verse 20 and verse 21. It says, declare this in the house of Jacob and publish it in Judah, saying, hear now this, O foolish people, and without understanding, which have eyes and see not, which have ears and hear not. They have eyes to see, but they don't see. They have ears to hear, but they don't hear. There's an old saying, and it's based on this verse, verse 21. There are none so blind as those who will not see. There are none so blind as those who refuse to see. They refuse to see. And so they continue on, deceiving and being deceived. This is a world on edge. The polarization, the strife, the hate speech, the ignorance. It's on full display daily. As I said at the start, here's this day. President Trump's rolling out his deal of the century for the Middle East. You think this is going to really make everyone happy? It's refreshingly pro-Israel, which is not something we've come to expect in recent years. But I don't think it's going to make Israel's neighbors especially happy. And of course, we know what is prophesied in Zechariah 14, 1 and 2 and other prophecies like that. Reuters has the latest. It says, U.S. President Donald Trump's expected to disclose details of his long-delayed Middle East peace proposal to Israeli leaders on Monday. So that happens today. You've got Benjamin Netanyahu and also his opponent in the Knesset, Benny Gantz. Both of them. They're in Washington, D.C. They both like the sounds of this agreement. It says here, Trump will hold separate back-to-back meetings with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and Benny Gantz. It says on Tuesday, Trump will deliver joint remarks with Netanyahu at the White House, where the president may reveal details of his peace proposal. Further on, it says, the White House hope is that if Trump could get the support of both Netanyahu and Gantz for the plan, it would help provide some momentum. A U.S. official said Trump wants to know both Netanyahu and Gantz are on board with the plan before announcing it. So this was Mr. Netanyahu yesterday as he left for the States. He's now in D.C. as of this moment. But before his departure, he said this to reporters. There's a translator here in the background, clip four.
I'm going to Washington to stand next to an American president who is proposing a deal that I believe advances Israel's most vital interests. Over the last 3 years, I spoke countless times with President Trump, a huge friend of Israel, and his team about these vital security needs, about our security, about our justice. I will meet with President Trump tomorrow, and on Tuesday, together with him, we will make history.
So these are two pretty close friends now who are determined to make history. And we don't know all the details of this plan as yet. But from what's leaking out to the press, and just judging by the way Israel's reacted to it, Prime Minister Netanyahu, by the way, I don't know if I still have this quote, what he said yesterday in his cabinet meeting, he was just raving about it. This deal that evidently gives Israel sovereignty over East Jerusalem. Jerusalem is not going to be divided. And of course, that's going to be the big sticking point with Israel's enemies. It will be divided, violently so. But as part of this agreement, the deal of the century, it's been called, Israel retains sovereignty over all of Jerusalem. The Palestinians, they need to accept a Jewish state. And then this plan also evidently supports Israel's annexation of parts of the West Bank, the Jordan Valley, of course, all the settlements. I think it amounts to about 30% of Judea and Samaria. And then how it gives autonomy to the, I guess, more than 2 million Palestinians that live there. We'll see how that's laid out in the specifics. Eli Lake said that few things bring together Netanyahu and Benny Gantz, but here is this deal, which seems like it's pretty good for Israel. And who knows how much of a boost it might give to Netanyahu in the Israeli elections coming up here in just a little over a month. But it says here, Friedman also raised the issue of Jerusalem in that speech. This is further on in the Eli Lake piece, referring to the U.S. Ambassador. And it quotes Friedman, the U.S. ambassador to Israel. It quotes him from a speech earlier saying, I think that even three millennia ago, King David recognized that Israel's enemies would seek to undermine the centrality of Jerusalem to the state of Israel and to mischaracterize and vilify the Jewish state. That's quoting Friedman. Eli Lake says, here, administration officials say, Friedman is reinforcing another element of the peace plan that East and West Jerusalem will remain under Israeli sovereignty. Prior peace negotiations have put off the final status of Jerusalem. And so here comes President Trump, the same one who said, hey, let's move the embassy to Jerusalem. Why not? Let's recognize the Golan Heights. Why not? This same president who, after 47 years, said, no U.S. president's gone to a March for Life rally? Well, I'll do it. He did it Friday. This is a leader that's showing some courage. Temporary resurgence. You've heard it on this program alone, over and over again, because it's prophesied. It's in our Trumpet magazines. It's at the Trumpet.com website. It's in 2 Kings and elsewhere. It says here, Palestinians claim the city, known in Arabic as Al-Quds, as their capital. In the final weeks of the presidency of Barack Obama, the U.S. abstained from a U.N. Security Council vote that declared Israel's presence in East Jerusalem was occupied territory. That Obama didn't even come out and say, now, come on, let's support the Jews here. He abandoned them. He kicked them in the face on the way out. It's a very different direction for the United States right about now. Well, we'll see the impact that this undoubtedly will have. on the Middle East in the short run, it's surely going to just strengthen that connection, that relationship between the United States and Israel. This plan they've been working on now for 3 years comes out today. We'll get more details of it as the week unfolds. When we come back, we will put our focus, speaking of Israel and Jerusalem, we'll put our focus, our biblical focus, on Jerusalem and the throne of David. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Jerusalem. The name means City of Peace, and yet no city has had a history filled with more war and bloodshed. No city has suffered like Jerusalem. It has been the focal point of religious wars throughout the centuries. Jerusalem plays a central role in the beliefs of three major religions: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. To the Arabs and Jews, Jerusalem is a national symbol. While both sides have attempted to form peace treaties, Jerusalem continually remains the center of dispute. Why all this conflict surrounding Jerusalem? Will the Israeli-Palestinian peace process put an end to the chaos? Will there ever be peace in Jerusalem? The Holy Bible provides the answers concerning the future of this great city. Your Bible states that the tensions revolving around Jerusalem are only going to worsen before they get better. This city will be engaged in some of the worst violence ever to occur in the history of man. But there is great hope for Jerusalem. At the conclusion of these painful events, Jerusalem will experience glory and magnificence as no city ever has, and there will finally be peace in Jerusalem. To understand the important role Jerusalem will play in future events, visit our literature library on thetrumpet.com and request our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
In Revelation 3, where it talks about the sixth era of God's church, the Philadelphia era, it refers to that era as having the key of David. And of course, God's church today is a remnant of that era, even though we're now in the Laodicean era, an era in which most of God's people have lost this vision, this key of David vision. And they're not walking through the open doors that God said he would put in front of us. In the booklet, That Prophet, my father says the key of David vision is the greatest vision in the Bible. What a vision. If we have vision, we'll thrive spiritually. Without it, of course, as the proverb says, we perish. Another quote here. This is from That Prophet. It says, it truly angers Satan when we talk about David's throne. Satan knows his reign is about over. He's composed of pure hatred and has nothing to lose. We talked about this at the start of the first segment. The prince of the power of the air. He's just filled with hatred and rage. He's stirring up people's attitudes, emotions, and impulses in so many dangerous and destructive ways. We haven't seen our countries, our nations divided, so deeply divided like they are today. We've certainly seen or had periods of division in the U.S., the Civil War period. England has had its civil wars as well. But the angry and divisive spirit, the hate-filled rhetoric, and then added to that, the mob that can get off and running so quickly now because of technology. Satan is full of hatred. He says here, thus, he's stirring up all kinds of hatred in this world, racial and other problems that can only be solved with the Key of David revelation. And then he makes this statement, the tighter we hold on to that vision, the angrier he gets, but the less he can harm us. The tighter we hold on to this vision, the Key of David vision, the harder we hold on to the throne of David, the safer we will be, the more protected we are. If Satan gets this angry when we just talk about it, what must he do or how must he react if we're actively working in Jerusalem or expanding God's work in that area or excavating? As we go forward with God's work to reach the cities of Judah, know this, Satan is angry. He hates God's work. He hates the truth. He wants to stamp it out. He wants the work of God left out of the discussion. Isaiah 9 and verse 6 says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. And his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." And then verse 7, "Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David." This is a throne that Christ is going to rule from forever. Established in just an ordinary man. Well, a man of faith, a righteous man, a man of courage. 3,000 years ago. Wow, what a history. And yet, what a prophecy. Isaiah 9 says that Christ is going to rule from that throne of David forever. The zeal of God is going to perform this. That's what the last part of verse 7 says. This is the grand sweep of history and prophecy. We've talked about that in recent programs. King of kings and Lord of lords, Jesus was born to be king. He was born to rule this earth with a rod of iron, to rule this earth with authority, mixed with love and mercy, of course. The worse this world gets, the evil waxing worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived, the worse it gets, the tighter we must hold to this Key of David vision, this throne of David vision. There's several important themes that are emphasized in my father's book, The New Throne of David. Several themes. One of them early on in the book is that we should honor Herbert Armstrong. We should honor his work, his ministry. The more we do it, the more God honors us. That's what my father said. You think about the new throne and the history going back to the 1930s, the prayer rock, the Fisher Farm, the daily ritual for Mr. Armstrong, exercise on the hill behind the farm, and then kneeling down at that rock to exercise spiritually, to draw on the power of God through prayer, earnest, effectual, fervent prayer. And this work of raising the ruins of Mr. Armstrong's work, the more we do that, the more passionate we are about that, the more detailed we are in raising it up, the more God will bless us, the more God will honor us, the more God will empower us. Here again, the tighter our hold on the Key of David and the throne of David, the safer we will be. My father says in the book, God expects more of us. He believes we can do more. He believes with everybody pitching in that we are going to excel in every way. But we're going to do it. Here it is. We're going to do it on our knees. like Mr. Armstrong did before the prayer rock. That is the only way. See, this is how we're safe. This is how we think right. We think straight. All weekend, like I was saying to the students earlier today, just looking at the deception, the level of deception and deceit, the lies, the fake news, the false narratives, all that's being reported or not reported, what's left out conveniently, what's redacted. And getting that lecture ready for the Churchill class, I just kept asking myself, why? How is it that we're so easily duped and deceived? Well, I went into that with the students earlier today. I guess I won't elaborate on all of that here. But one thing it certainly did impress upon me over the weekend in my prayers to God is that we have to be plugged into the mind of Christ. Philippians 2:5, I went through that recently with you, but we have to plug into that mind or we won't think straight. We're just being bombarded with the influences of the devil. Just a constant bombardment. The prince of the power of the air. Now more than ever, we have got to be on our knees, fervently crying out to God, asking God to help us to see this world the way He sees it, and to get behind this work in God's church the way He is behind it. This is the, Mr. Armstrong used to talk about this work being uppermost in God's mind. This is what He's most excited about on this earth. The only thing that people on this earth can get excited about is celebrity, and you can see it when one of them dies, like yesterday. That momentarily can bring a lot of people together. God's truth doesn't do that. The truth of God doesn't rally people together the way that the celebrity culture does. It used to, to some degree. Obviously, the world's cut off. But think about when the throne of David, Isaiah 9, 6, and 7, think about when the whole world rallies around the throne of David, when the whole world kneels before the prayer rock, when the whole world draws on the power and the strength of God Almighty, when the whole world thinks like God thinks. Well, another important theme in the new throne of David is the royal standard and how that God is elevating our thinking, even our thinking, our thoughts. He wants us to think like kings and priests. It says in the book, we must continually remind our young people, this is actually from the Key of David booklet, we must continually remind our young people that they are God's princes and princesses of the earth. You can read about that in Psalm 45. It says, but they won't remain princes and princesses. They are to become God's kings of the universe, the most exalted calling in all eternity. They must be taught and encouraged to uphold that royal standard, to act like God's royalty today. Well, that's for our youths. It's for our adults. It's for all of us. To act like God's royalty today. We've talked a lot about the royal family in recent weeks. The one here in Britain, the old one. This world needs a royal family. This world needs kings and priests that rule righteously, that hasten righteousness, as it says in Isaiah 16. God's preparing us to rule. This world needs it. Godly rule like never before. Another theme in the New Throne of David book is it really does heighten our sense of urgency. In that book, my father talks about the transition stage that we're in, transitioning from this world to God's world. He says, God moving David's throne is one of the great signs that Satan's time is very, very short. There's a deadline here. There's a set time. And so we want to be urgent the way God is urgent. We want to make the most of every day that we have left. There's not a day to waste. There's not a moment to waste. Bring a greater sense of urgency to God's work. And if you're struggling with that, well, go and study the New Throne of David. Study that book. And you will have a greater sense of urgency. Added to that, you'll have a sharper focus in your Bible study. That's another important theme that we see in that book. My father says in the New Throne of David, we must live our lives fully aware of the shocking brevity of time. We must be urgent about our prayer, Bible study, and spiritual endeavors. We've got to be, how urgent are you with your study and your prayer? We're all human. The spirit is willing and the flesh is weak, as the Bible says. But if we're lagging or if we're struggling, we've got to stay with it. We can't give up on it. We've got to create the space, the time. We've got to remove the distractions. And we've got to obey God, the very first commandment, to put Him first. Bible study, prayer, that's where it starts. That'll help you to think the right way in a world that's just off the rails. It's gone crazy. Another theme, expect more power and miracles. Just like I said, the more you wrap your arms around the key of David, the throne of David, the safer you will be. And the more you can expect miracles, the more you can expect deliverance. Look at some of the history in this church. The history of God's work. Look at the lawsuit victory. Someone from headquarters just brought me a soft cover version of Raising the Ruins. We just had those newly printed a few weeks ago. It's a beautiful book, a beautiful printing, and a powerful, powerful story. History of God in action, of God leading His troops to victory. Lots and lots of miracles in that history, that six-year lawsuit from 1997 to 2003. And of course, there's lots more when you think of the entire 30 years of the PCG or the 50-some year ministry of Herbert Armstrong before that. The miracle that started at the Prayer Rock, of all places, at a farm in Northwest Oregon. Not by might, not by human might or human power, but by my Spirit, says God. There's plenty of power. There's plenty of power if we'll go and get it from God. My father writes, God will see to it that our work will be considerably more powerful. Do you believe that? You should, because look at what's happening in this work of just a few people scattered over the earth. And God's work surging forward. A final theme here, briefly, I'm about out of time. If you go through the New Throne of David, you're going to have your focus on Jerusalem. Focus on Jerusalem. We really and truly are preparing to rule with Christ from Jerusalem. And that's why there's such an intense interest in that city. Because that's our city. That's the future headquarters city of the world tomorrow. And God gives us projects there. He gives us a work there because He wants us to set our minds there. He wants us to make Jerusalem our chief joy, as it says in the Psalms. Perhaps later this week I can go through some of that with you. But that's all that we have time for on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can send email to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.